Hi everyone, this is Katie. I just have a quick note before we start the show. Some news broke after we recorded this episode, so often happens, it's very rude. In this case, the big news is that Donald Trump was permanently banned from Twitter, and there have been a lot of other developments in the social media sphere. We are going to do a special episode about this. It will be for patrons only, and if you want to join us, you can do that at patreon.com/blockedandreported. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Hey, Jesse, were you in D.C. this week?
No, there was this big rally I wanted to go to, but I had some other stuff going on.
I swear to God, I saw a video of you floating around online. You were in a toga, naked from the waist up, and your chest was painted red, and you were wearing a beer hat and swinging from a chandelier in the Capitol building.
I mean, that sounds like something I was due, but I was not there. What do you think explains this?
I mean, either you have a twin, maybe it was your brother, or you're lying to me. Those are the only options.
So this was a member of the calm, peaceful demonstration to try to keep Trump in office.
Look, Jesse, this was just the voices of the unheard. That's all it was. Just the voices of the unheard.
Finally.
And besides, you know what? It's just property. It's just property. Property, damaging property isn't violence. Damaging words are violence, but damaging property is not violence.
Oh my God, Herzog. This might be one of the... I have a feeling we're going to disagree this episode. There's going to be some... Actually, I shouldn't say that. There's a lot to discuss. Should we just get into it? I mean, this has been a crazy week.
Yeah, let's jump into this mud pit.
And also, multiple people referenced some joke I had made on the podcast that I don't even remember about having our listeners... I guess march on DC. Do you remember that joke? I genuinely don't remember that.
I don't remember it, but it does sound like something you would have done.
I will,
because you incite people to violence with your words. You do that.
I will say, look, it's a delicate time in our history, but if hypothetically some of our listeners thought that you had been treating me unfairly and saying mean things, and they thought the best way to get the authorities' attention would be to storm government buildings, you know, I wouldn't tell them not to, per se.
Like I said, it's just the voice of the unheard.
How bad would that have been if one of the Stop the Steal people was wearing a Blocked and Reported shirt?
Instead of a literal
Auschwitz shirt? Did you see that?
I did see that. And then I saw somebody... Okay, so to back up, there was a photo floating around of a guy, this like bearded guy. He looked like he was maybe in his 50s, wearing a shirt that said Camp Auschwitz. And then, so this was like... going viral. And one of the responses, like maybe it was the person who initially tweeted it, but one of the responses was like, wait a second, someone just pointed out that he might be a survivor.
And he bought a sweatshirt that had the fucking, and it said in English something like, you know, work makes freedom, which is Arbeit macht frei, which is literally what festooned the gates of. Someone thought that he survived Auschwitz and then bought a sweatshirt like it had been like a theme park he wanted to remember.
Yeah, like a 50-year-old man. He went to
and a 50-year-old, right. That's the other thing.
He went to the Holocaust and all he got was this fucking t-shirt. Yes.
Oh my God. There was another shirt. It was this acronym I'd never seen that's basically 6 million is not enough. So they were like, you and I have decried false uses of the term Nazi. And I believe we've both been called Nazis ourselves, which is hilarious. But like there were actual Nazis there, which is not great. Not great overall.
Well, you know what? It's also incorrect because it wasn't 6 million people killed in the Holocaust. It was closer to 10 million. So at least get your facts right.
It's a, yes, 10 million total. Katie, what podcast is marching on the Capitol?
This is Blocked and Reported, and I'm Katie Herzog.
I'm Jesse Single. This has been a pretty busy and fucking crazy week. The second half of this podcast we're going to devote to... God, life was so much simpler a few days ago. A few days ago, Bean Dad was the talk of the internet. We thought we were going to be able to get away with mostly talking about Bean Dad this week.
I know, and then they had to go and ruin it for us. I was so excited to talk about Bean Dad. We are still going to talk about Bean Dad in part because everybody is talking about what happened in DC, and I think it will be a nice little palate cleanser to talk about really stupid internet bullshit for just a little while. Get our minds off of the collapse of the empire, whatever the fuck is happening right now.
Well, also the stories are naturally connected because the Trump supporters got so enraged by Bean Dad, they stormed the Capitol. So it makes sense.
They were just trying to protect the children.
Trump supporters do like the idea that they are protecting children. A lot of pedophilia stuff, a lot of QAnon. So yeah, we will talk about Bean Dad. If you don't know what that means, you are the blessed lucky ones, but we will explain it to you. But first, yeah, complete fucking chaos at the Capitol. You have Capitol Police, in some accounts, letting people through, 50 of them getting injured, one of them getting killed, a protester getting shot, three other protesters dying because of medical issues. Just
spontaneous heart attacks.
Apparently. I mean, this is just...
This is what happens when you don't eat right and exercise before you go to the big riot.
To do your insurrection. Yeah. If you're going to do an insurrection, just some basic health tips first, please. Common sense.
Check with your doctor first.
This was like, look, nobody thought that these 47 people or whatever it was were actually going to be able to like take and hold the Capitol. But what was so alarming is like, this is the shit we see in other countries. It is not supposed to happen here. And
wait. In other countries, in let's say Bolivia, would they actually have the insurrection led by a guy with a fur Viking cap?
That's a really good point. I think other countries are a lot classier than we are, even in revolutionary situations. But
more successful also.
Yes. I mean, as with everything else, American revolutions are not what they once were. Like this was not exactly a hard scrabble band of patriots fighting off the redcoats, was it?
It was more like a Black Friday in Kentucky.
I don't even know where to begin. Like, there's an element of internet bullshit we will have to talk about here, because that's what our show is about. And this was internet bullshit is the way the media class and the expert class expresses its opinions these days. But there's no real words for the craziness of an American president inciting a mob to storm the Capitol. And while he didn't use the exact words, "I want you to breach the Capitol," he very much continued to tell them the election had been stolen. And he said, "Go to the Capitol." And part of what worries me about all the talk of internet bullshit, which I myself got roped into last night, is like, I think certain situations, like, it's not... You can always dive into Nuanceville. That's what we do on the show. But this was pretty fucking straightforward. This was like horrifying and unprecedented. And we should just like, it's okay to take one moment and not like worry about, you know, whether it was covered exactly the same way as something else or what are the liberals. Like, this is just like insane. And a lot of conservatives let this happen. They let this craziness build up because they didn't feel like they could stand up to it. And I think people should be held accountable.
Right. I mean, it was just unbelievable to watch this unfold, truly unbelievable. And I don't mean that in a good way. I do think that there, like, I was obviously kidding at the top of the show when I said that, you know, riots are the language of the unheard. That is something that MLK said, that is something that you heard frequently over the coverage of the riots and the protests over the summer. I do think that there is something to this idea that, let's just assume for a second that these people really genuinely believe that the election was stolen, just like the writers over the summer really do believe that we live in a white supremacist society. I think both of these things are wrong. I think they are both operating off of bad information. But I do have a little bit of empathy for, on both sides, people who have been led to believe these things that are not factually true and react to them. I mean, it's fucked up. It is fucked up no matter, like, I am against political violence. It is fucked up no matter how you look at it. But it is not just, I guess what I'm saying is, I don't think it's just the individuals who were there on the march, obviously, who need to be, you know, taken into, to be held responsible for this. They have been fed these lies by right-wing media. Their fucking Facebook groups are also feeding them these lies. The president is feeding them these lies. Their senators and representatives are feeding them these lies. And they reacted to what they honestly thought was the theft of an American election.
Yeah, I think... Okay, I mean, as we will discuss, at a certain point, you just need rules about what is and isn't allowed. Then you can't let ideology be the deciding factor. I do think it's a little bit of a facile analogy to say, like, okay, you, Katie Herzog, and me too. Like, I think it's a little bit pat to say, like, you know, America is just a white supremacist hellscape, or policing is like murdering so many people, when the situation's a bit more complicated than that. I just, there was a level of people being motivated by pure conspiracy theorizing here that to me is a little bit different from like getting in the streets because you're outraged that police kill people, which they do. Like, it doesn't mean there isn't misinformation among the people protesting and sometimes rioting for police reform. But I think part of why this is so disturbing is just like, everyone knew Trump wasn't going to accept the election results, and everyone knew the entire far right ecosystem from Alex Jones on down would come up with bullshit. But just to see it sort of come together in that form of this very physical thing of attacking the Capitol building, it's just, I don't know. I mean, we talk a lot about left of center craziness because we feel like we can have more impact there, but the shit going on the right has been out of control for a long time, and so much so that I sort of eventually just stopped ignoring it, because, like, how much time can you spend on these bizarre websites talking about, like, the pedophiles who rule us or stolen elections? It gets exhausting, but, like, I don't know. It just has real consequences.
I mean, yeah, it absolutely does have real consequences, as we have seen this week. And this is not to say that both things are equally fucked up. I think both groups were probably passionate. Both groups are sadly misinformed about the world. One, however, tried to overturn the results of an election, and they might genuinely believe that the election was stolen from them, but they still tried to interrupt the democratic process, and there is no excusing that. That said, over the summer, we had months and months of cities burning, of private businesses burning, of people being harassed in their homes. 25 people, according to the Guardian, and according to a Guardian piece that was published in October, from the George Floyd protests to October, 25 people had been killed in those protests. Now we have at least 5 people dead in this protest. Both of them are very, very fucking bad. And I get why people are annoyed by what they perceive as whataboutism, but I see these things as connected, right? We live in a country now where political violence has become tolerated. It's become encouraged. And this is really deeply fucked up. And that, like, there's no excusing that.
Yeah. So the reason, okay, so this is, the fifth column guys, some of them were supporting this general theory of the case, which is that basically, and I'm somewhat sympathetic to this, but then I'm going to sort of rebut myself. Like, okay, the amount of just ambient political violence in the air can increase or decrease. And we've seen a general increase of it this year, for sure. We have also seen progressive and liberal commentators pretending it isn't big a deal. I think Chaz and Chop is the best example. It's just like, you know, a chunk of a city is taken over by vigilantes, and because they're on our side, we don't care. And then people fucking die because of it. That's disgraceful. That said, the Capitol wasn't stormed because protesters burned down a police precinct or a courthouse or Kenosha. This is all very bad. But the connection to Trump himself and to far-right media is so obvious. And Trump gave a speech right before this happened, riling them up. So it's like, you know, there's this thing, if you talk about sort of women's rights in some parts of the Muslim world, person A will say, wow, that country treats women really horribly. We should reform that. They don't let them drive. There's always some asshole who's like, well, do we really treat women in the West much better? And the proper response to that, at least like the first response, is sort of, fuck you. We're talking about this very specific thing. So part of me wants to be like, This was a very clear what happened, and it seems a little bit like a distraction or maybe a separate conversation to talk about the broader political violence. I mean, are you just, you're convinced they're intimately connected and one somehow led to the other?
No, I'm not saying that, but I am saying that the atmosphere right now, the vibe, the United States vibe, is that political violence has become acceptable. If you agree with, I'm obviously generalizing here, but if you agree with the cause, I think to a shockingly high percentage of Americans, somehow political violence is acceptable if the cause is righteous enough. And the problem is that everybody thinks that their cause is righteous. So I believe that these people honestly believe, some of them honestly believe, that the election was stolen. And if you imagine the opposite, if you imagine that it was, you know, just like reverse the characters here, if I thought that the election was honestly stolen, I might be compelled to go march on Washington. You know, I mean, obviously, yeah, like after Donald Trump won the election in 2016, the left mobilized with a pussy hat march. And hilariously, my dad sent me a text message, a photo of my mom wearing her pussy hat after this started on Monday or Wednesday or whatever that was. She put on her pussy hat to take a walk in the neighborhood. But that, you know, that's, there was this, like, the coordinated response to Donald Trump winning was a mobilizing millions of people across American cities and marching in protest. I think that is a better response. But if you honestly think that the election was stolen from you and that your guy belongs in office and he tells you to go raise hell at the Capitol building, I can see how these dumb fucking people did it. And I'm not excusing their behavior at all, at all. But I am saying that I think they have been deeply misled, and it is not just their lack of brain power that has led to this. They have been conned.
I mean, I think they've been used. Trump uses people.
And yeah, like, they have been used. Yeah.
Do you think Trump is going to pay for their court fees or their representative? I mean,
oh my God, yeah.
They've right. been used, but I don't, you know, I got sort of frustrated seeing a few conservatives trying to point a finger back at, like, yeah, there was absolutely left-wing political violence and rioting this summer, and, you know, coverage of it was not great. I agree that's a problem, but, like, get your own house in order. Like, you and I, we do spend a lot of time criticizing progressives. I don't want to hear from conservatives, you know, your first response should be, how the fuck did your side of the political aisle let such profound craziness happen? And how did so many of your elected representatives abet this nonsense by really pushing these conspiracy theories? And I understand there's always a small handful of Dems claiming elections were stolen or trying to, but there's no comparison between these responses. Nothing like you said, millions of people were unhappy Trump got elected and sad and frustrated. Nothing remotely like that happened. I mean, you can't compare it.
I mean, I agree with you that I agree with you there. I think this, obviously, this whole thing is shameful. Everybody involved should be arrested. They should be held accountable, including Donald Trump, including the politicians who encouraged this. And it looks like that is probably going to happen, at least when it comes to.
You think Donald Trump himself should be held legally responsible?
I don't know if he can be. I mean, Anthony Fisher argued that he did incite these riots. I don't know that a prosecutor would, like, if you look at the text of his speech, I don't know if it's explicit enough to bring charges against him for incitement. I would love Donald Trump to spend the rest of his fucking life in jail. I do think he needs to go to jail for breaking the law. I don't think we should just put him in jail because we don't like the guy. There has to be something explicit. You know, if
there's
there's
going to be some opportunity. There's legitimate crimes he can be charged with. So if prosecutors want to do that, they will have an opportunity.
And are you talking about in terms of this event or shit that he did while in office?
Mostly finance related. I mean, there's my understanding is there's crazy campaign fraud. If they wanted to pursue stuff he did in office, they could. I think the best bet is New York prosecutors who have really looked into some of the financial stuff. And he's been doing illegal shit for decades. Like, this isn't new. It wouldn't be a witch hunt. This is how he operates.
Right. No, I think a better scenario is that he is not arrested for incitement for violating the First Amendment. I think that a better, a better outcome would be him being charged with financial crimes or whatever else he has done while in office or before in office or whenever. Charge the whole fucking lot of them, but make sure it's for shit that they did. When it comes to impeachment, I think best case scenario, invoking the 25th Amendment, it's not going to happen. Impeachment, I'm fine with that. It seems like a little bit of a waste of time, but, you know, even if he fucking resigns and walks away and is able to tell himself that he quit and wasn't fired, I'm fine with that too. I would like the guy to be gone tomorrow. But you know what? Even if he doesn't, it's like, what do we have left? Like 12 days?
Yeah. I mean, I did not like the optics of Congress just, like, once they certify, packing up and going home. This seems like a situation where you want to spend a day or two even just, like, talking about what happened and marking this as an unforgivable outrage.
Yeah. Well, and I do think that I was actually sort of surprised that Republicans, for the most part, did sort of immediately disavow this.
It's like I hold Mitch McConnell in such low esteem that him just, like, acting like a normal person. And don't get me wrong, I think politically, unfortunately, he's, like, a little bit of a genius and is ruthlessly effective. But as a human, no thanks. But, like, he to his credit, actually got up there and was like, this is ridiculous. But, you know, even after this, you still had a large number of House representatives continuing to challenge the election results.
He did, yeah.
It's just crazy, man. The next 10 years of American conservatism is such a interesting thing to think about, because it seems like they're fucked because their populist wing is completely off the rails. Like, imagine if, like, half the Democratic base, rather than being nice wine moms and church ladies, was like our enemies on Twitter, and they had real sway, like more sway than they do. Your party would be in trouble in a situation like that.
I mean, this is, I think, frankly, this was a great week for the Democrats, besides the fact that they took the Senate, which really should have been the big story on whatever day that was. Was it Wednesday? Did this happen Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Tuesday?
I have no idea. Yeah, it's like that got overshadowed, like a crazy pair of Senate. I mean, not crazy in terms of, but that's like,
it's a Georgia. Huge deal. That's a big deal. Yeah.
No, I mean, the Democrats are they will find a way to fuck it up, but they are in the best shape they can possibly have hoped to be in.
And it, not only the fact that they won the Senate, but I think that, you know, this like failed revolution or whatever it is, I don't think that it was actually a coup. I don't think it fits the technical definition, but I think it could be a coup, you know, a Q-U, a Q-O-U, whatever. I think that this is actually a great day for the Democrats because the Republicans lost so much fucking credibility, so much fucking credibility.
I will say that I don't like death in any circumstances. I would have preferred no one to die, obviously.
No circumstances? Well, none?
Sometimes. But the idea of these fucking GOP members of Congress who have enabled this shit and coddled it and not stood up to it, having to be in lockdown because of what they helped create, there's a small measure of justice in that. I'm glad they all got out okay. I would not want any of them to get hurt, but like, that is potent and worthwhile symbolism. They had to hunker down because these fucking crazy assholes had decided to try to do a revolution. I am a little bit satisfied by that. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm a bad person.
What I want to know is how Antifa feels about this, because overthrowing the government is like their goal. They failed. And of course, part of the reason that they failed is because there was like a lot of people, and I think there might be something to this. I don't think it's totally racial, but a lot of people have, of course, said, you know, if this was a Black Lives Matter rally, there would be a different level of security. I think that's right. But I also think that it's not just Black Lives Matter. I think it's ideological. So if there had been an Antifa rally and it had been, you know, known that this was happening, I think the level of security probably would have been higher too. So I think it's a little too simplistic to say this was just like whiteness.
They got to I don't know if like the Capitol Police, if there's like some inspector general, I assume there is, that oversees it, but like that 500 page report is going to be important, because how could this happen? I mean, it's just crazy. I know like literally a bunch of Capitol Police were just overrun, but that should never happen. What if these had been like hardened terrorists out to kill as many people as possible?
Right. Which, it, you know, it turns out that that actually might not be as difficult to take over the Capitol building as one would hope. The question is, was this coordinated, like a conspiracy, or was this incompetence? And I don't know the answer to this, but from what I've read, it's a little bit more difficult to deploy the National Guard in DC, because usually it's the governor who requests that, and because there's no governor of DC because it's not a state, there's no one to, I guess maybe the mayor could have requested it, I'm not sure about that, but it would have taken the federal government to deploy this. Donald Trump is the head of the federal government. Obviously he's not going to do that because these are his supporters. Is that a conspiracy, or is it like just like bad logistics? I'm not totally sure, but I'm sure this will all come out, you know, when there is a congressional investigation.
There's also, I'm seeing a Washington Post headline, Pentagon placed limits on DC guard ahead of pro-Trump protests due to narrow mission. I don't know what that means, but I think there were some other reasons the guard might not have been involved. But either way, like, Capitol Police should be sufficient to keep a relatively small, not heavily armed group out of the Capitol building. Like, you shouldn't need them bringing the guard for that. And I haven't watched all the videos yet. Apparently there were some shots of the guards, not like the main battle out front, which looked fierce. That's how you got 50 cops injured and one dead. But elsewhere, people were saying they like sort of let them in and stuff. There's like some uncertainty there. I just think it seems like the general storyline is they were overrun, which is a scandal in its own right. But I saw a lot of like bad takes suggesting some level of like actual complicity. And I don't think that's fair, because from the Capitol Police's point of view, this is like the most profound professional humiliation imaginable. They don't want this.
Right. And the chief has already resigned, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So this was, it was just a bad.
I mean, I would not find it at all hard to believe that that police are going to be more sympathetic towards, you know, Blue Lives Matter MAGA protesters than anti-police protesters. That is like obvious on its face because anti-police protesters are policing the protesting the police, which is sort of one of the like fucked up things about police policing the protesters. Protesting them. But I think that, yeah, you know, there's obviously a lot of conspiracy theorizing going around right now. And the smart thing to do would be to like not make any grand statements about this until there's some investigation.
Yeah.
What were the worst takes you saw in the aftermath of this? God,
don't do this to me.
I think Vox is up there.
Oh, Jesus. The Gamergate thing.
Yeah, Vox posted a piece by what's her name? Asia
Romano, close personal friend of the podcast.
Yeah, and the piece was, I can't remember the headline, but it was something about how like we can blame who can we blame for the riot? Gamergate, something like that.
Well, it was not only that, but it was a piece that had already been written that they repackaged. I mean, this would take a whole episode to unpack, but some of these nerds just have no sense of history, and they're so obsessed with like the online bullshit they're involved. It's sort of like the thing with TERFs we've talked about, where people are obsessed with TERFs,
right?
When TERFs have no, I mean, Gamergate was a little, it was a public event, but the idea that you can connect this to Gamergate is like deranged. So
yeah, I mean, how many gamers were out there?
A lot of them had the physiques of gamers, so I don't want to say zero.
I did see some guy who had what was either a like a Nazi tattoo or a logo from a video game. Couldn't tell. I saw both sides floating around. Did you see Arthur Chu's takes on this?
Oh yeah, Arthur was he went on Jeopardy. He gained some sort of cult celebrity status for being on Jeopardy, and then during Gamergate, which was this big culture war blow up over video games and sort of progressive journalism and obsessive online people of all stripes and harassment. There was a lot of harassment. Arthur Chu became a very staunch advocate for social justice. And over the years, Twitter has, you know, it's like when you, what are they called? Sun-dried tomatoes? Is that the word I'm looking for?
You sound like Hilaria Baldwin. How do you say in English, sun-dried tomatoes?
In my country, how you say, so like the thing that I assume happens to a tomato when you leave it out in the sun too long, or a raisin for that matter, happened to Arthur Chu's brain because of Twitter. Because all he does is rail about Nazis and stuff on Twitter. So we'll include a link to this, but he just had like, he and some others have just been, celebrating this woman's death, and I watched the video, and look, I think death is horrible. And
what was the woman's name?
Ashley Babbitt. I genuinely think the vast majority of deaths are tragedies. She basically like was asking to be shot. What she did is what you do if you're trying to get shot.
Well, did she have a weapon on her?
No, but she tried to smash her and her people tried to smash through glass and run at law enforcement in a restricted area who had their guns drawn. So, I mean, she didn't, I don't think she got on the ground and actually started running toward them, but she was like moving toward them, smashing through glass. I always would prefer not for people not to get shot, but like, let's be realistic here about what's going to happen if you break into the Capitol building and run at police with gun drawn.
Sure. But there is something very rich about seeing the same people arguing for abolishing the police and defunding the police and getting rid of the police. And primarily over police violence, now saying they should have shot every fucking one of them.
Oh, I mean, again, this is like the Twitter stuff I'm trying not to get too fixated on because most normal people don't think like this. But yeah, so Arthur did a long tweet storm about how it's good this woman is dead. And then this extended tweet storm about Nazis. I don't think this woman was a Nazi. Not everyone in the crowd was a Nazi. There were actual Nazis based on their shirt. So this is one of the few times you can call some of them Nazis. But Arthur did this very weird tweet storm about killing Nazis is an act of love. He like sounded like if you could somehow make someone who is anti-Nazi sound unsympathetic, he pulled it off. It sounded like he's a psychopath, basically.
Here's what he wrote. Ashley Babbitt feeding the worms is one of the few good things that happen as a result of the Capitol protests, and if you feel the need to mourn her Nazi ass, it'll be easier for us both if you unfollow me now. When a bullet goes through the fatty tumor a Nazi has in the space of where a human being would have a brain, nothing is lost. A pile of meat that moved and spoke and acted like a person was made to stop moving, and thus could no longer fool people it was thinking it was one of them. That is textbook dehumanization, and you shouldn't dehumanize anybody, including fucking Nazis, because they are human beings. And if you pretend that they are somehow not, I don't know, what are you doing? Like turning them into monsters? I mean, these are actual people and you need to contend with what they believe.
Wait, I don't think you read the best part though.
A Nazi is the opposite of a person, and therefore morality to them must be reversed. To hate them is to love. To harm them is to heal. To kill them is to bring life. You should feel less bad than you do about putting down a rabid animal. In that case, the rabies virus and the host are separate entities. One was the victim of the other. A Nazi is a disease.
It is, like, it's so weird to be disturbed by someone coming down hard on Nazis, because Nazis are the worst, but, like, well, I mean, for one thing, this is the whole problem, is if you say we can have completely different rules for Nazis, but then you don't actually have a clear method of distinguishing Nazis from non-Nazis, which he doesn't, because this woman, she was a far-right lunatic, she was not a Nazi, but this is what I'm talking about. We've now spent fucking, well, I guess this is our podcast, and it is very entertaining, but I almost feel bad getting mad at Arthur Chu, who is a crazy person, because it feels like a distraction from just like the gravity of what happened. But there were a lot of bad. Charlotte Clymer had a similar take.
So bad. Well, and Charlotte, who is Charlotte? Charlotte is in HRC. What's Charlotte's job right now?
I don't know. Charlotte's story is incredible because she's a trans woman, and before she transitioned was the subject of a ridiculous pylon that sort of, I think she ran a feminist Facebook group or something and was a jerk to people. But in this world, if you're a jerk to someone, that's abuse and you're like a monster. So there's this whole Stop Clymer hashtag. It was a crazy story, but now she is just like one of the most toxic social justice figures on Twitter.
Right. So in 2014, The Cut, New York Magazine's The Cut, wrote a piece called "So You Want to Be a Male Feminist, Maybe Don't." And it was about Clymer as being this like creepy male feminist, and then now of course Clymer is Charlotte and has become a hero.
People fawn over her. She's just a hero for civil. I mean,
right? But she had these tweets in response to what happened. Let me just find them.
While you're looking for those tweets, the other tweet she got in trouble for lately was she said that Stacey Abrams should be the Atlanta Falcons quarterback.
That is so offensive.
When she sees a successful black woman politician, her first football player is she should play a sport. Because I'm on Twitter too much, it just annoys me. These people can say whatever they want, like the sort of people in the good graces of. And then if you or I said something like that, we'd be like, it'd be done.
Okay, so this is Charlotte Clymer in June. If you're saying we shouldn't hold the police to the highest standards and that it's not troubling that a state-supported force can murder unarmed civilians with impunity, that's quite an opinion to hold. Some might call it even bonkers. Civilians will always murder civilians, but we are told that cops are the enforcers of moral standards, which means they should embody the highest moral standards. So tell me, why wouldn't we be far more troubled with murders by cops? That is that not a reflection of morality? Fast forward to January 2021. Please stop saying that woman's death is a tragedy. She was a traitor and a terrorist. She was prior military and sure as hell knew the risk of breaking into the U.S. Capitol. Stop excusing the heinous actions of white women. It's absurd. I love that Charlotte immediately makes this about white women. Like, how many like women were actually in the crowd here? This was from what I observed, it was like the dude like fucking hanging off of the walls of the Senate chamber and vaping. These were mostly men, but of course, like,
it was Karens and TERFs who led the uprising.
It was pussy-hatted white feminists. So yes, lots and lots of bad takes. It has been a fucking exhausting week to be on the internet. Probably not as exhausting as it is to be a Capitol Police, but exhausting
these
nonetheless.
These people are the fucking worst. It's just awful. I mean, it's in addition to being a tragedy that these supposedly pro-cop motherfuckers killed a cop it just tells you everything you need to know. I mean, it's insane.
You know, this is why I wonder, like, are anarchists happy about this? All cops are bastards, right?
So there was this rumor that the Washington Times published that Matt Gaetz latched onto, that these were Antifa people in the crowd. And then the Times had to do this crazy correction that was basically like, no, sorry, we were totally wrong about that. You would think Antifa storming the Capitol building, albeit for different reasons, That seems like the kind of thing they would want to do.
Well, the funny thing is that that exact rumor started over the summer when there was political violence and people were burning down like auto zones and shit. And the immediate response from some on the left was to say that this was, you know, this was covert.
Right wing provocateurs.
Yeah. Like people are making the exact same excuses.
No, but like I know horseshoe theory is a cliche, but it's just, it's all the exact same shit. It's all the same. Okay. This, for instance, the question of like, what is a morally fair thing to happen to someone who doesn't respond to a police command? You have these two different contexts, but it comes down to the same thing. And maybe police in the Capitol during the incursion will respond differently. But at the end of the day, you sort of need a consistent standard. Like, no one in any other context would say that's, it seems like most progressives would be opposed to someone getting shot for violating a police command. And I guess you could say it's apples to oranges, but I was mad at the conservatives trying to distract, but I can sort of understand the bad faith is piled so high at this point, and media has done such a horrible job working through these questions during what has been a very violent and destructive year. So I can't argue with every conservative argument here that there's been... just there's some bad faith stuff afoot. Yeah, we should be able to talk about that. We should be able to like have a sober assessment of the media coverage of the protests over the summer. But this thing just happened. It was the nightmarish result of some horrible shit going on the right.
It is striking. The parallels between the responses to the two are striking. Like yesterday, I saw people, there was like the CEO of some company in Chicago was arrested. There was one of the guys who was like wearing an insane like Renfair costume was the son of a judge. And the same thing happened over the summer when these like trust funders would get arrested and the New York Post would publish a story about how these are like basically rich kids LARPing. You know, it's the same shit. Like you, if it's your side, you can excuse political violence as the voice of the oppressed. You know, you blame agitators, you blame outside agitators. You know, it's just, it is, the response is very similar. And what is different about this is the media coverage. And I do think that is absolutely worth exploring. It is disturbing to see lots of people in the media excuse political violence when it happens on, you know, on their own side or with a cause they agree with. And I saw this is not just something that happens on the left. I watched part of Tucker Carlson's show in the immediate aftermath of this. And he sounded like Nicole Hannah Jones talking about Black Lives Matter protesters. Basically, nobody listens to these people. And if you don't listen to them, this is what's going to happen.
The one thing that does sort of defeat comparisons is this is the one instance of like a police shooting that, you know, it occurred inside a breached federal building. And that might defeat some apples to apples comparisons because I don't care. I'm fine with police being more trigger happy in a situation like that. I think they have to be. Like, your job is to defend that building.
It's their job to defend police stations. Do you think they would have been justified in shooting the people who set fire to police stations in Seattle and Minneapolis?
I would, in a situation like that, I would prefer for them to honestly withdraw and let the precinct burn if it's a choice between that and starting to kill people. But I would want people to go to jail for a long time for burning down a police station.
Yeah, they should. You know, another thing that was like another one of the parallels that I saw was the all of a sudden giving a shit about symbols. You know, like the statues were just symbols, but the Capitol building, yeah, it's much more than just a symbol. You know, just people are super full of shit, and we're really seeing it this week. And this is not like I want to be really clear about this. I think this is fucked up. I don't think the two things are equivalent, but there are some parallels.
The other amazing hypocrisy was Trump, just to show he was serious about clamping down on the protesters, signed some like executive order highlighting just what a horrible sacrilegious act it was to attack like national monuments like statues. And then he fucking goads his supporters into doing exactly that. I mean, what?
Well, and the best part is that they could be charged. They could face like more prison time because of this executive act that Donald Trump signs.
Yeah. Although I'm not sure how much. I think with a lot of his executive orders, he just has no idea what power he does and doesn't have. But it's definitely the case that like this is the kind of thing where if the feds want to clamp down hard, they should. And you know what? I think they should look closely at the video evidence, and they should, if you shouldn't go to jail for overrunning Capitol Police and breaching the Capitol, what should you go to jail for?
Yeah, there should be, absolutely, there should be consequences for this. Just like there should be consequences for people who are, you know, burning down fucking targets and like police buildings in Portland and Seattle and everywhere else. Like, there needs to be, that's the thing. It is incredibly difficult to not be a hypocrite about this. And I've been inspecting my own biases about this. Like, I will admit, while this was unfolding, I thought it was a little bit funny, like deeply fucked up, but a little bit funny just because the visuals were so, like, I was listening to the radio and a newscaster says, it appears as though there is a man smoking a vape and hanging from the walls of the Senate chamber. It's a little right. bit funny. It's like, no, it it's was. Like, it's like spring break. It's like spring break was canceled and all of these fucking NASCAR fume breathers lost their shit. It's a little bit funny. I don't think I would have thought it was funny if it was Antifa. And part of that is because of the costumes. I will admit, there's just like something about this like redneck.
You're saying Antifa should dress like Vikings. Basically.
I am. Exactly. That is exactly what I'm saying. If they had more like Pepe the Frog hats and more like Viking hats and beer goggles, it would be a little bit more palatable.
So Jamel Bowie made what I thought was a fair and interesting point, that there is a risk of writing people off as LARPers, because like the history of American domestic terrorism, you have the KKK, where they would literally call someone a grand wizard and dress up in mm-hmm. goofy robes. You have this whole sort of this pageantry, the costumes, you have stuff that can be silly and menacing at the same time. What I think is different is like Reconstruction failed because local authorities let domestic terrorists do whatever they wanted. That's not going to be the case here. Like, both political parties are united in outrage and they will be clamped down upon. But I did think that was an interesting point, because I've used the term LARPing a lot, but like, we shouldn't assume just because someone's a LARPer doesn't mean they're genuinely dangerous.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, you can still like cause a lot of trouble. You can still kill people and burn shit down and destroy things, even if you are fucking, you know, Renfair LARPer. That's a good point. One thing that we need to be watching, and Glenn Greenwald, of course, has been pointing this out, is that this is the sort of thing that is, you know, used to crack down on civil liberties. Glenn says that we're going to be seeing a new war on terror. I would not be at all surprised if we do see an increase in domestic surveillance and people being charged as terrorists. And it's not just going to be the people who did this in particular. There will be long-term consequences of this. I think if you are somebody who is concerned about wokeness and concerned about the illiberalization of the American left, this is also concerning, in part because there will be a backlash to this, and maybe part of the backlash will be justified. But I think this is a very dark moment for all of us.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it too, there's been a lot of sort of percolating talk over content moderation and Section 230 and stuff. And, you know, in some cases, I don't mind these platforms taking action against like really crazy conspiracy theories, but there are obviously trade-offs there. And I think you and I both think that like, there's no reason to think that it's like a safe thing to do to vest all this power in Mark Zuckerberg, that he's always going to make the right call. So it's something to be worried about, I think.
They've already, so as of today, they banned the group Walkaway, hashtag Walkaway, which is a group of, it's supposed to be like Democrats leaving the Democratic Party. I think it's probably conservatives like saying they're leaving the Democratic Party. But this is not a group that, as far as I'm aware, has committed any sort of political violence. I mean, they're definitely conservative, but it's a legitimate, I think it's legitimate. It's silly, but it's, you know, it's not a hate group or anything like that. And they were banned from Facebook. I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of this. Josh Hawley's book was canceled by Simon and Schuster.
Yeah. And I have conflicting thoughts on that. I think overall the stuff going on in publishing, which we're going to talk about in our Patreon episode, not this, but another incident, is bad. The fact is publishers have a lot of discretion to just drop authors. There's also, I don't know if this was true in this case, there's these morality clauses that Judith Shulevitz wrote about that like are highly questionable. They can just be like, we don't want an author who like seems to really be trying to incite a counter-democratic revolution. There's like a part nag at me that feels like I shouldn't go down this road, but I'm also having trouble mustering much outrage. Are you more concerned about this than I am?
Well, I think it's a bad trend. I mean, we've talked about this before. And I think, and I, for me, like, my guiding principle is to not be a hypocrite. And I don't think that, you know, people, you should revoke someone's book contract or fire them on the basis of, you know, sort of Twitter demand, which I think this was partially true in this case.
Well, I get, so maybe this is the difference. Like the Woody Allen thing, it's like there's some genuine ambiguity over what he did. He wasn't charged. You know, I think at least one investigation cleared him. In that case, you're just responding to like your outraged staffers and to Twitter. In this case, like Holly did, you know, contribute to inciting an actual violent event with some crazed conspiracy theorizing. But I get what you're saying. I maybe the stance is to just be against this trend in general. On principle.
You know, I think that for me, it's just like, I don't want to be a hypocrite and I don't want to have double standards on this stuff. Abigail Schreier tweeted something I found kind of interesting. She wrote, "You're not entitled to your book contract, can quickly become. United does not have to let you on its planes. Marriott doesn't have to let you stay in hotels, or Visa doesn't have to let you use its cards. And maybe that's the point. And I think she's right about that. And I do think there is something dangerous about, you know, American corporations deciding who can use their products on the basis of ideology or businesses or whatever. I think there's something dangerous about that, as much as I disagree with Josh Hawley and think that he's a fucking dumbass.
Yeah, if Schreier is right about that slippery slope thing, that's bad. And, you know, there have been cases of, like, payment processors declining far-right content creators.
But that's the thing. It never just ends with actual Nazis, right? It never just ends with the Daily Stormer. It always creeps. Once the door is open, and the door is open, you know, there is other people, you know, losing the fallout.
Yeah. I can't say I'm not worried about this. So 2021's off to a good start. We'll have to see what happens.
Yeah. I think the big lesson here is that if you are going to start a revolution and take over the Capitol building in the middle of a global pandemic, wear your mask.
You would just think if there was ever a time to wear a mask, it was now, because this is just going to be like shooting fish in a barrel for the authorities to round these fuckers up and charge them.
Yeah, they really fuck themselves on this one. Face paint won't hide your identity, guys. I'm sorry.
I mean, in their defense, how could they have possibly known there'd be surveillance cameras or people with cameras? So just, these are not when you know, to paraphrase Donald Trump, when right-wing idiots send their protesters, they're not sending their best.
Maybe they are sending their best, Jesse.
Or maybe, actually, this might be it. This might be the ace one.
Yeah. Should we move on?
Yeah. Do you want to, let's move on from domestic terrorism to a can of beans.
And honestly, you'll be the judge of what's worse. Okay, so John Roderick is a Seattle guy. He is the host of not one, not two, not three, but four podcasts, which is a crime in itself. He's a musician. He owns a record label. He plays in a band, The Long Winters. He also was a touring musician with Harvey Danger. Do you remember Harvey Danger?
I'm not sick, but I'm not. Do you want me to sing the whole thing or just a
little bit? So on January 1st, celebrate the new year, John Roderick put out a 23-tweet storm about teaching his daughter to use a can opener. And it starts out like this. "So yesterday, my daughter, 9, was hungry and I was doing a jigsaw puzzle. So I said over my shoulder, 'Make some baked beans.' She said, 'How?' Like all kids do when they want you to do it. So I said, 'Open a can and put it in a pot.' She brought me the can and said, 'Open it. How?' And what unfolded from there was his recounting of this incident in which he refused to teach his daughter, show her how to use a can opener, and how he forced her, cruelly forced her, to figure out this, how to use this can opener on her own. Here's just sort of a representative tweet. It's written in this sort of, I would say, floral style. This is later down in the thread, after she had been struggling with this for a while. At this point, she said, 'I don't want baked beans,' and marched off. Apocalypse Dad went into full the road mode. 'Sweetheart, neither of us will eat another bite today until we get into this can of beans.' She screamed, 'Ugh,' like Lucy Van Pelt." She read her book for a while. So she eventually, it takes apparently, he says, 6 hours. She eventually figures out how to clamp the clamp onto this can of beans and open it up so she can have some. Well, first of all, like, also, who the fuck eats baked beans? But that aside, she eventually figures it out. And it becomes a story of perseverance. So here's his final tweet. I'm proud of her too. I know I'm infuriating. I know this parenting this is parenting theater in some ways. I suffer from a lack of perseverance myself, and like all parents throughout history, I'm trying to correct my own mistakes in the way I educate my child. She sees through all this. The swing away can opener is a little voodoo doll for us all now. It will reappear as an allegory many more times in her life, you can be sure. She knows this too, but this is an allegory of triumph, and I wish this I had more of this for myself.
When does he stop?
I wish I had more stories like this. And then the final tweet, the only problem is now she wants to open every fucking can opener in this house. So he clearly thought that this was like a good parenting story. He was clearly proud of himself. He was clearly proud of his daughter. He taught her resilience. He made her figure out how to open up this fucking can of baked beans on her own. Jesse, as you can imagine, he was awarded Father of the Year.
In the form of a trophy shaped like a can of beans with actual beans inside.
Exactly. Okay, so no, of course, that's not what happened. What happened is that the thread goes viral, and he was immediately almost accused of child abuse. So here's a representative tweet. This is from a user named Communist Siren. All I'm hearing is, that time I told my dad I was hungry and he wouldn't let me eat for another 6 hours for no good reason. Like, did you ever go through that as a kid? You go too long hungry and then you feel sick and think you might pass out? No, then don't do that to that kid. Here's another one from someone named Dr. Timmery. He's abusive. He delights in the power he wields over his child, who he notes has problems with spatial orientation, process visualization, and order of operation. Like so many abusers, he sees the harm but is unmoved, believing, I'm doing this for your own good. So initially, Roderick is sort of jokey and defensive about this. He says at one point, the best part of being ratioed by these parenting concern trolls is that they keep harping on how depriving my kid of baked beans for 6 hours is child abuse. 6 hours is the length of time between meals. Lunch at noon, dinner at six. They're literally saying child abuse. So he clearly thought that this was like kind of funny in the beginning. And then a bunch of his, as happens every time someone goes fucking viral, a bunch of his old tweets from 2012 and 2013 were dredged up. And they looked bad. Here's sort of the worst ones. He said at one point, he's responding to a friend of his. She says, John Roderick, it sucks when people get off on a technicality like, wow, your Fourth Amendment rights are violated. Go cry to your mommy. And he responds, the Fourth has been perverted by activist Jew judges and mud people apologists. The founders intended USA as a white homeland. Another of the worst of them. He's responding, and this is to the same woman. Her handle is important, Megan. This is from 2013. He says, maybe the white half of you that went to law school can get the black half out of jail on some boohoo technicality. To her again, how did that black girl even get into a science class? Shouldn't standardized testing have eliminated the possibility? At one point, he uses the term Jew lover. He uses some Italian slurs. That's probably the worst thing that he did.
Worst of all.
And so he has these like jokey tweets that are clearly like written to a friend of his who he has a relationship with. She doesn't seem particularly offended by them, although I don't know if she made a statement out of this. Anyway, the tweets get dredged up, also go viral. Now the story becomes Bean Dad is a racist. The podcast.
A racist abuser.
The podcast, My Brother, and Me stopped using a Long Winter song for their intro. His friend Ken Jennings, who he hosts a podcast with, defends him. And then all of a sudden, Ken Jennings is in the shitter. And Ken Jennings also has some like jokey tweets in his past that have come back to haunt him. And so I saw like the Seattle Times did a story about like, is this going to kill Ken Jennings' chances of hosting Jeopardy? And then so this goes on for a day or so. And then John Roderick comes out with an apology. And by the way, so I reached out to him. I invited him to be on the podcast. He did not answer. He deleted his Twitter. And then he released this apology, and I'll just read a couple of sections from it. I want to acknowledge and make amends for the injuries I caused, and then later in the apology. I woke up yesterday to find that I had become Bean Dad. I reread that story and clearly saw that I'm framed it so poorly, so insensitively. Bean Dad, full of braggadocio and dickhead swagger, was hurting people. I'd conjured an abusive parent that many people recognized in real life. And then he goes like on and on.
He needs an editor so badly.
So he's run for city council, and the like thing about him when he ran for for city council was that the dude would not shut the fuck up. So you would like call him for an interview, and like 3 hours later, you're getting off the phone like exhausted from sweat from John Roderick talking at you. So he is very verbose. He goes on to sort of explain his jokes. He says, "As for the many racist, anti-Semitic, hurtful, and slur-filled tweets from my early days on Twitter, I can only say this: all of those tweets were intended to be ironic, sarcastic. I thought that being an ally meant taking the slurs of oppressors and flipping them to mock racism, sexism, and homophobia." Blah, blah, blah. So he's basically like throwing himself on the fire. "I'm a middle-aged, middle-class, straight white male, and I try to be cognizant of that and all the responsibility my privileges entail in everything I do. In this case, it was precisely my privilege of not living in an abusive family, of not being a member of a community that routinely experiences real trauma, that caused me to grossly misjudge the impact of the language I chose." He ends by saying he will be doing a lot more reflecting in the coming days, so he's taking a hiatus from his public life to let these lessons sink in.
Did he put a number on how much reflecting he'll be doing? Five reflections, 15?
Yeah, 5 out of 10. I'm not sure. I mean, he has, as of yet, his Twitter is still nuked, so I assume that he's still reflecting. You know, maybe Bean Dad started the riot just to get this shit out of the news.
This might, like, you know, cast me in a bad light, but I always dislike these people way more after their apologies than after the incidents. I mean, it's just this sort of like the actual beanbag story, I thought was like pretty clearly like comedian exaggerating a story. I think in the apology, yes, he also mentioned that him and his daughter had a bowl of nuts they were munching on.
Yeah, like his wife was there. She was also, the daughter was also helping him with the puzzle. It was not, you know, like lock the girl in the room for 6 hours and don't let her out until the beans are open.
Right. So the results of this controversy are arguably less important than the results of people storming the Capitol. But I don't like giving ammo to the types of people who make online life miserable because they either don't get jokes or pretend not to. Like, if that story actually triggered your own traumatic memories, that's a mental health problem that you should get looked at. Like, that's not anyone else's job to make you not collapse into a heap when you go online and someone makes a joke. Although I think people are often just like sort of lying when they print, like, it just seemed very shticky and that everyone should have understood it was shtick. With the slurs and stuff, I understand people like why that comes across worse, but this was a dude who was like a musician embedded in liberal culture. The idea that he was just like an actual white supremacist out in the open for years, saying that to like another liberal on Twitter just like doesn't pass the smell test. This whole thing was just so stupid.
That just tactically, I think it's a bad idea to apologize when you haven't actually done anything wrong. And in this case, in terms of the way he was parenting his children, so I heard from one of our listeners. Her name was Ileana Almog. And so she practices a sort of teaching called constructivism. So constructivism is based on the philosophy of a guy named Piaget. Are you familiar with him?
Yeah, he's a legendary developmental psychologist.
Okay, so his pedagogy is based on the idea that children learn differently than adults. And so I'm going to read you a little bit from this message I got from Ileana. Children learn by doing, by using their body in several senses at once, and by constantly making predictions and testing them in their environment. Explaining how a simple machine works to a kid may result in their memorizing the explanation, but it will not actually understand what is happening. So according to this school of thought, this is actually the appropriate way to teach children how to do things. And considering that the child wasn't actually starving to death, she was there with her dad getting frustrated, yes, but also laughing and having a good time. And her mom was there to make sure that, like, nothing fucking abusive happened. This seems like what he was doing was actually a good parenting technique. I don't think he meant to do it. I don't think that he's a constructivist. I think he might have, like, you know, stumbled into this. The idea that this is abusive when, according to this, like, school of teaching, this is actually the appropriate, most effective way to get kids to learn shit. And, like, the reality is the kid probably really fucking understands how to use a can opener and how it works at this point. So I don't think he did anything wrong in the parenting. I thought the tweet storm was a little bit obnoxious, but only because it did have this sort of self-aggrandizing like morality to it, which I find a little bit annoying, but not like not immoral, just sort of annoying. And then as for the jokes themselves, I can't believe that this is something that needs explaining, but it does apparently need explaining. People say things that they don't mean to elicit a reaction. That's
part of what a joke can be, right? And there was a time, and I think that time hasn't totally ended, that time still exists, where you affect a voice, you do a bit. It's like you are affecting the voice of a racist to satirize the racist. It is not a genuinely held belief that Jews are mud people or whatever. He doesn't literally believe this. And I doubt that anybody at the time when he said this in 2013 believed it either. But something has shifted now. And so bits are no longer allowed. You can no longer like take the voice of somebody and joke about them using this sort of voice. You can't do that anymore, apparently. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the Justine Sacco thing, where she did the voice of like a racist white girl and lost her fucking career over it. So I just like, I hate that he apologized because he didn't do anything wrong in 2013, because this was socially acceptable in 2013, or he wouldn't have done it. And you should not apologize for things that were not taboo at the time that you actually did the fucking thing.
It sounds like, based on what you're saying about that constructivist stuff, that the true abusive parents are the ones who just feed their kids without making them work for it.
Yeah, I think that is true. No more that if I were a parent, the child would be cooking for me.
If I have kids, I'm going to make them solve a Rubik's Cube every bite of their baked potato, which is all I'm going to feed them because it's cheap.
I'll just say, I'm not a parent, but I do think that kids are a little bit soft these days, and I include myself in that. I'm a soft person, right? Like, I was raised in sort of a coddling environment. My wife was not. My wife is so much more fucking resilient than I am, and so much better, better prepared to handle adversity than I am. Obviously, this is my parents' fault, and the fault, and you know, the fact that like she wasn't allowed to wear shoes in Alaska in the winter. I'm kidding about that. That didn't really happen. But there is something about forcing hardship upon your children, not abusing them, but making them figure shit out, making them frustrated, making them work for things that will make them better adults.
Part of his tweet storm said that one of the reasons his daughter didn't know how to use a can opener is cans all have pull tabs now. That's not my experience at all. Like, whenever I buy, I don't buy baked beans. I buy like black beans. They never have a pull. What was he talking about? Fact check your tweet storm, dude.
You know, I think maybe he shops at Costco.
Do they have pull tabs?
I think some of them have pull tabs. Yeah. Yeah. So he definitely has privilege if he's buying the ones with the built-in pull tabs.
Dude, don't people want the word abuser to mean something? Isn't it bad that literally everyone is an abuser now, including people who make jokes about being a bad dad? Like, people got to get their mental health stuff taken care of and not inflict it on others.
Right. If him relaying this like very simple story triggers your childhood trauma, that's not his fault. That's probably your parents' fault. And you need to go to a fucking therapist or volunteer or do something to get your own shit in order, because it is not the world's job to coddle you and to hide you from jokes or stories or any particular thing that could trigger you.
But yeah, and it sounds mean, but like, you can say that with love. Like, mental health issues are no joke. They're not. But you're not going to resolve them by lashing out at people who make dumb jokes. It doesn't help anyone. And if you feel truly victimized by that stuff, you don't have to be on Twitter. Like, if there have been online communities I've retreated from because, you know, I didn't feel traumatized by them, but they just made me miserable, you can just do that. So yeah, it is just this idea that like the world has to fold itself into a shape you're comfortable with, which just isn't going to build any resilience.
Right. And that's, you know, presupposing that these people aren't full of shit and they aren't just like saying,
which
that,
some of them are.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. That this isn't just a nut, like this, like he did this for likes. He did this for, you know, his own sort of engagement. And, you know, people who are accusing him of child abuse are doing the same thing.
It sort of reminds me of like the literally shaking meme. Like, there's this joke where people who are suffering horrific harassment will say they're literally shaking. So everyone's harassing me, but then they just keep tweeting over and over. They don't get up and leave the computer. That would literally instantly cut them off from the harassment. So it's like sort of self-victimization for clout almost.
Like, look, I am triggered by the music of Ed Sheeran. When Ed Sheeran comes on the radio, I don't call the radio station and try to get them fired. I just turn it off.
That's so brave of you. That's how you should handle it. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm resilient.
You are extremely resilient. Was that it for Bean Dad? That feels like Bean Dad was weeks ago.
It does. Bean Dad got preempted by the QQ.
Is that it?
I think that's it.
Is that it for the podcast forever? Have
we just that's it. We gotta go gear up for the Civil War. No more podcasting.
It's gonna be.
And by Civil War, I mean Patreon episode.
If you did want to storm the Capitol, you missed your chance. It is about to get much more difficult.
And it is. It is. They really fucked it up for everyone. They fucked it up for the PETA protesters who want to go throw blood on the Capitol steps.
As always, you can report our errors and send us praise and criticism and slurs at blockedandreportedpodcast@gmail.com. We have a Patreon, the premium subscription program where you get 3 extra episodes a month. I recently said 3 a week. No way, we're not doing that. That was an accident. It is 3 a month, and we're about to record one on a literary culture war blowup based on a magazine article in Vulture. Patreon.com/blockedandreported. We have a subreddit, reddit.com/r/blockedandreported. Apple Podcasts, rate and review us. The war for...
I want to say something about that.
What?
Have you looked at our reviews lately?
It seems like there's been fewer of them, maybe.
It's stuck. We've had no reviews since like early December, which is very strange. And so I said something about it on Twitter, and a bunch of people sent me screenshots of reviews that they submitted, and none of them have been posted. So either there's a problem with Apple Podcast, or we're being shadow banned.
This is definitely pedophiles at the highest level of the Democratic Party, including Hillary Clinton, trying to censor us.
They're also cannibals and globalists. And if you want to fight back against the pedophile, cannibal, globalist, you can do so
Capitol.
By rating and reviewing us on iTunes.
Or rating and reviewing us on that is weird, though, because I thought that... Yeah. Okay, we should look into that. But yes, continue rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. Anything else, Katie?
Oh, it's going to be a long year.
This has been Blocked and Reported. I'm Jesse Single, and remember, if you are a far-right protester seeking to overthrow the U.S. government by breaching the Capitol building, make sure to bring a healthy brown bag lunch.
And I'm Katie Herzog. And if you see a man in a Blocked and Reported hoodie squatting in Nancy Pelosi's office, it's just a coincidence. He's got nothing to do with us.